Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Happily Ever After, an Hourglass Bride. Today we are at the studio, a television studio, and we're now doing Hourglass Bride as a TV show called Happily Ever After. And today we have a very special treat because we had a guest on our television show today that I so eagerly wanted to bring to you on the radio show because I think that this information is so important and it's so timely that I really decided that I was going to literally just create space and energy and time to bring him on today. Today's guest is Dr. Kevin Ross Emery. And Dr. Kevin Ross Emery has been on our show before, and he's, oh my gosh, he was on Unlimited Life, and he just talked about ADD and autism, and I mean, his information and his material is just astounding. And one of the most incredible things is any time I've ever introduced him to anybody, they just say they can talk to him for hours and hours and days. He is a wealth of information. He truly is. It's like just this endless amount of information, knowledge, wisdom, pearls of truth. And so I love what he's talking about today. Today he's going to be talking about legalized child abuse. And he actually has a book on legalized child abuse. And we're going to talk about what that is. And it sounds like such a harsh, incredible thing, but it's something that's happening every single day to people that you know, children that are in your own life, your neighbors, your friends, your relatives. So this information, I think, is so powerful and so impactful. So I'm so eager for today's show. And Dr. Kevin Ross Emery is really sought after as a leader, as an innovator, as an author, as a teacher, as a synergistic catalyst, as a speaker, and as an expert in the ADD-HD field. He has worked for major companies like American Express, Dartmouth College, the Hilton, the Sheratons, and in the 80s, he was truly the driving force for the creation and the implementation of training programs in the banking, retail, food, and in the financial service industries. His work in the professional and the personal development fields, as well as the corporate, the small business, and entrepreneurial fields, have given him such a huge and a wide and vast platform to work for. And in his work with Synergistic Catalyst, he has helped to build businesses and business owners maximize their potential, as well as working with their teams and taking the business's potential. And he is amazing in his work and his advocacy with children. He is really a groundbreaker. He is the band leader. He is truthfully the well of youth and of information and of light and of possibilities and of change. And his resume and his bio, I could sit here and literally just talk for days and days about not only all the work that he's done, but all of the results and all of the good he's done for humanity and his service and truly the programs that he's created and the information that he's brought to the world will forevermore not only change society as it stands today, but will change your children's future and your children's future and how we live life here on this planet. And so I am eager. I am jumping up and down in my seat to bring you today's show, and I am just absolutely thrilled to bring you today's guest with a great big welcome. Welcome, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Well, Nicole, as always, thank you for having me. Any time that I can spend with you is time that is not only well spent for me, but I know that it's well spent for the world.
Oh, well, thank you so much. This is, you know, this show to me is so beautiful, and it's so amazing because it's not just about getting married. And it's not just about if you've been married for 25 years or you've been married three times or if, you know, you're combining families. There's so much information. But what we wanted to do when we created the show, and which I really believe that every week we are doing 100%, is we want to improve the quality of people's lives. And so when you had mentioned to me that you were writing this book and wrote this book on legalized child abuse, something stunned inside of me. I was like impacted in a way I've never been impacted before, because just hearing those words together, legalized child abuse, I my breath was taken away, and right away I said, can you come on and do this show? And when you told me what it was, and I realized this happening in our own backyard and in our own homes, I realized how very important it was to have you here today.
Well, thank you. And I just do want to clear that up, because I sometimes so often am in the process of, in the creation process, I already speak as if it's done. And so I just don't want your audience confused. I'm currently working on the book, but it has not been released yet. But if they do, you know, if they come to mydrkevin.com or managenotmedicate.com and sign up or, you know, get on the mailing list or whatever, as soon as it's out, they will be notified. But just, like I said, I want your listeners to be aware, because if they go look for it right now, they're going to be like, I can't find it.
That's funny. And you have so many books that are available right now, so why don't you tell them what they can find today? Because everything that they can find that you have written and that you've done, even from your blogs to your videos to your radio station, I mean, your work is just so incredibly powerful.
Well, you know, the book that actually just came out this week is Famous People with ADHD, Are You One Waiting to Happen? And, you know, in this Hourglass Bride and, you know, now in the TV show Happily Ever After, with the increasing number of ADHD children being born and now adults being identified, the chance is you know somebody in your life, and it could be your parent, it could be your sibling, it could be the person you're getting ready to marry or the person that you've given birth to that's going to fall under this qualification. And it's so important for us to not limit. And, you know, the way I would like to say it is, first we label, then we disable, and then we medicate. And the disable comes second. Because when you say to somebody often enough and regularly enough that they are disabled, you will disable them. And so instead of looking at where the system is broken, where the informational system is broken, where the educational system is broken, where things are not functioning, where to serve these individuals, you know, I always go back to that Einstein quote about, you know, you can't judge a fish on its ability to climb a tree. And I'm not doing it exactly correct, but, you know, the one I'm referring to, that it is, you know, so important to keep this stuff in mind. What I wanted to actually start today's show with is a quote from Kahlil Gibran, if that would be okay.
Oh, I would love that.
This is out of his book called Prophet, and it's because of our topic today of legalized child abuse. You are the bows in which your children as living arrows are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might that his arrow may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness, for even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he loves also the bow that is stable.
Mm. Wow.
One
of
the
amazing.
One of the things is that as I started, you know, and I've been working with children for over 20 years now, you know, through my private practice and the things and classes and workshops and such. And over 16, specifically with ADHD, but all children, but with a big focus there. But I've watched what we've done, and I've watched how things have evolved. And some of the things that are going on today, and how quickly we will identify something as abuse, on one hand, and yet on another hand, completely turn our back on things that we either feel powerless about, that we are spun what is convenient for the authority figure who is spinning it for us to believe, or if it is profitable. And that is the saddest to me. How many children
are you talking about?
We
are, our family or our school systems or our government or our medical system?
Well, I think that it happens all. I think it happens all over. I think that there is a combination of things that happen where people are parents are taking advice from authority figures, who in turn sometimes are guiding them because they have been misguided. Sometimes they're guiding them from a place where it's profitable for them, that parents are not always getting the good information. And sometimes the parents are the ones that are delivering the information that fits what they believe to be true. And, you know, one of the things that started me on this was a radio show, because I have a weekly radio show, the Dr. Kevin Show, and that on there I was actually reviewing the fact that there had been a school shooting a week since Newtown. A week. Every week.
A week.
And
a
then
school shooting
a week.
On
some form, yeah. And that there were, in 2014, there have already been 10 deaths due to school shootings. 2014, 10 deaths due to school shootings. And what I was horrified with, and, you know, and of course, you know, people want to make this a gun control issue, and they want to talk about this, and, you know, what's going on, and what's wrong with these kids. And one of the things that really clicked for me and made me angry, I've said versions of this before, but it really seemed to hit home in this moment, Nicole. And that's was when are we going to stop making the child the problem?
Right.
When are we going to stop making the child the scapegoat? When are we going to stop making the child disabled? And when are we going to start realizing something, a number of somethings have gone terribly wrong in our world, that these children are doing these things? I mean, I read the list of school shootings just from the beginning of the year on my radio show, and I went on for 5 minutes. And, I mean, I just read them. Some days there were days that there was like 3 school shootings in the same day in different parts of the country. Georgia,
I mean, that's bringing tears to my eyes. That's crazy.
Okay. So bullying is up. School shootings are up. NPR recently, you know, had reported that our children are less fit. They're less healthy. They're less physically fit. And one of the things that I looked at, and one of the things I started really getting upset about, was how easy it is for us to abuse these children into thinking that they're bad, they're wrong, and twisting them in such a way that they act exactly how we've set them up to act. We've created, and then we wonder how it's happened. And that's when I started creating this. What are the ways in which we are legally child abusing these children? I mean, we look on, we have these ludicrous things that happen, which drive me crazy. Like the poor guy who took a picture of his kid, you know, his like 2-year-old, playing in the bathtub.
In the bathtub, right.
Yeah, playing in the bathtub, and is charged as a sexual predator. Now, I don't know about you, but bathtub kids, pictures of your little kid in the bathtub playing with, like, you know, soap has been around as long as there's been cameras. And probably they were etching it on stone walls.
And they used to be baby ads. They used to have baby ads with the babies in the tubs with soap or whatever, for baby shampoos and for all sorts of things.
So we get just horrified, like, oh my God, this is a sexual predator here, and blah blah blah. On one hand, we do this, and we make that the big issue. We make, you know, that is what comes an issue. There was a family not too long ago, I don't know how far back now, to be honest with you, but there was a situation where they were going to take the children away from the child away from the family, and they were going to accuse the parents of being unfit because they would not give their child ADHD medication. Now, that medication has black box warning labels. It's toxic. It has side effects. There are studies out there that show that over a long term, they do not help. Now, there are actually studies that show that you do better without it, but you don't hear
about
it.
Absolutely.
And so we have all of this information, but social services is going to take this child away, not because it's a life-saving medication, but because it's a medication of convenience that they're going to take them away. And, if your two-year-old that's wearing a three-inch diaper, you pat them, on the backside and give them a little spank because they're reaching for something hot. I mean, I'm not talking about beating kids. Oh, my God, you're a child abuser. We have become hysterically, sadly pathetic in our obsession about child abuse of things that is just normal parenting. Then on the other hand, here are some of the ways in which we legally child abuse. Are you ready for some of these?
Yes. And my heart right now is pounding so fast just at the idea. So go ahead.
So the first way that I want to – one of the first things that I want to bring up is the idea – of feeding our child bad food that leads to health issues and obesity. It went down just a little bit this last year, and everybody was, hey, childhood obesity is down. Isn't that great? But I want to share some figures out of CDC.gov that child obesity has more than doubled in children and quadrupled in adolescents in the past 30 years. The percentage of children aged 6 to 11 who are obese have increased from 7% in 1980 to nearly 18% in 2012. Similarly, the percentage of adolescents from 12 to 19 has increased from 5 to nearly 21% over the same time period. More than one-third of our children and adolescents were overweight or obese. This leads to isolation. This leads to health issues. This leads to emotional and mental self-worth, self-esteem issues. So we stand by and we encourage poor families. We'll give them medication for free if they want to medicate that child, but we won't guarantee that they get healthy food for their children. We don't educate them to the level that we need to about them eating healthy food. We don't intervene if that child comes in at 3 to 4 times its body weight into school, sitting there drinking soda, munching on crap. We don't say anything. How is that not child abuse? And what makes it even sadder is I will bet the same thing happened to you that happened to me that's been happening for 3 or 4 generations now, which is as a young child, if we did something really good and we were rewarded with food that was bad for us and addictive, sugar rich.
I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you for a second because I remember you telling me a story where you received donuts as a reward, these two donuts, and that really stuck with me that your reward was donuts.
Yep. And how often are they cookies or are they candy of some kind? And so we associate in a very young age bad food with good behavior and love, and then we wonder why people comfort eat. There was a research study done that said that before a child is exposed and gets a chance to get addicted to these high fructose corn syrup, products and juices and cereals with all this sugar and all of this stuff in it, that a child, given a choice, would choose a piece of fruit. But when the child says, oh, you did such a good job, and is not handed a grape, but is handed a cookie, we start the process of attaching in their mind that love equals this kind of food. We go on and we continue this process. And some of the foods that are worse for our kids are some of the cheapest foods to buy. And, you know, we have millions of dollars being spent on hundreds of millions on pharmaceuticals, on recovery, on things that have to be put in place to offset the damage that's being done, because we won't pay for good food, we won't educate about good food, and we won't hold good food as accountable.
And isn't childhood diabetes at a high right now as well?
Yes. Yep, childhood diabetes. And there are children that are getting type 2 diabetes. It's not juvenile diabetes. It's the diabetes that old people used to get because they had a lifetime of eating bad food. And they're getting that lifetime in by 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 years old now.
That's just remarkable. Yeah. It's so crazy. And then not only are we feeding our children the sodas and the cookies and the donuts and the fast food, and the fast food comes with treats at the end or whatever that is, and, you know, and all these, you know, potato chips and snacks and all this crazy stuff that's out there, then we've cut down on the fitness programs in our class, and we've cut down in fitness and life because kids used to go out and run and play, and now they're on their computer or they're on their phones.
Well, and you're out there grabbing and stealing my thunder, and that's fabulous. Because let's move to that. Let's move to the fact that we have cut back recess. So first of all, if you want to hold parents accountable, if social service wants to stick their head into your family life, stick your nose in because you took a picture of your kid in the bathtub, or because you said, you know what, this medication that's been known to cause death or permanent disability, I don't think is a good choice for my child. It's really not that bad. I think there are some other ways I'd like to. If you're going to stick your nose in there, then let's start sticking it in when kids are getting diabetes at 10 or 11 or are, you know, two or three times the size that they should be to be healthy in their body weight. So now let's move to another set of abusers, public education. Public education in of itself, and just what you said, Nicole. We've cut back recess. We have cut back physical ed programs. We've even cut back arts programs. And that in of itself has been shown that kids that do music and do arts do better in English and science and math. But yet we take them away. Ever since, and it's gotten especially worse since we created the Every Child Left Behind Act, where we tied ourselves to a set of mediocre testing. We are 17th in the world for education. 17th.
And I'm going to jump in for a second. 17th in the world for education, but yet our universities are, you know, Stanford's or Harvard's or Yale's, whatever, MIT's, are the top universities in the world. People come from other countries to go to our universities, but yet our own system of educating our people. People come from other countries that are the top in their fields, that are the brightest, smartest kids come here. But our brightest, smartest kids can't get in our very own schools.
And, you know, I have actually been told this by more than one professor, and we're talking some Ivy League professors, they have to teach things now that they didn't have to teach 5, 7, 10 years ago because they're not getting it in high school anymore. And that the amount of work they have to do for stuff that used to be just standard is amazing. And so we have truly a mediocre education system on the world stage. Let me tell you what some of the education systems do that are some of the best in the world. One of the top education systems will only do with young kids, like through elementary school, even into middle school. They only give them 30 to 45 minutes of education and then let them get up, move around, take breaks, move them to something else, do something completely opposite, because they know that that's a better way to learn. They give them more breaks. They give them more, quote-unquote, type playtime, recess time, because they know the kids will learn better. And their children are scoring much better than our children are. And what are we doing? We're continuing to cut them back. Tell me where the sense is in that. We have the largest percentage population, the largest number population of ADD and HD diagnosis and medicating kids in the world. And the top five educational systems rarely diagnose ADD, HD, and almost never medicate. It's just a different style of learning, and they adjust to the style of learning of the child. And they have the top educational systems, and our parents are being told, and the American public is being told, that these kids have to be medicated to do school. These kids have to be medicated to do mediocrity. What does that tell us? How is this not abusive? We give them enough sugar to feed a third, small third world country for breakfast. We put them on an addictive treadmill with the sugars. We don't give them the support and structure. We don't teach in a way in which they learn. We try to keep them on an assembly line. We punish them for falling off the assembly line. And then the punishment is we medicate them into not being themselves.
Wow. And you know, when you talk about – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, that was actually another statistic I wanted to share with you. But go ahead. What were you going to say first?
I was just going to say, also, when you're talking about school, and I know that as a child, and I don't know about yourself, but I used to walk to school. And now kids are driven to school, or they, you know, have public transportation to school, or they're on scooters or mini bikes or whatever that is, or, you know, these high-speed racers, and so they don't have the exercise even getting to school. And, you know, and when you were talking, I was also thinking about the pollution, that we're killing our kids, and a form of child abuse is what we put in the air and the way that we handle our trash and the way that we handle the planet is also abusing our children.
Absolutely. And, you know, what we're doing is we are abusing our children, and we are making our children profit centers. There are a lot of there is a number of people who are making tons of money off our children having mental and emotional illnesses and disabilities. And so the things that cause those are supported because lots of money is being made off of them. It's the old theory that if you want to know why something happened, follow the money trail. And, you know, you talk about this whole, you know, we used to walk to school. We used to have things. And, you know, as I go through this, one of the things I want people to also realize is this life and lifestyle we've created in of itself has become abusive from a number of different perspectives. There's about 17 million children in the world, 17 million in the world, the whole world, are on some kind of psychotropic drug, addictive stimulant, antidepressant for educational and behavior problems. So there's 17 million in the world. 10 million of those in the U.S.
Figure. Oh, my gosh. 17 million in the world, 10 million in the U.S.?
10 million of those are in the U.S.
That's crazy amazing. And these are drugs that we are supplying our children. And
yeah,
people that used to give drugs, we would call drug dealers, and we would arrest, and they were our criminals and our bad guys.
Children 5 years old and younger are the fastest growing segment of non-adult population prescribed antidepressants in the U.S. Children as young as 4 have attempted suicide while being influenced by such drugs, and 5-year-olds have committed suicide.
And we see a lot of kid violence now, too, because the kids are not steady and stable.
Yeah.
And that's
now,
crazy. Yeah.
Talking about crazy, call me crazy. I don't know if the fact that the number one by more than $50 million, by more than $50 million, that the number one lobbying group last year putting money into Washington pockets with the pharmaceutical industry? Call me crazy. I think there might be a correlation why those numbers exist.
Well, we start our babies with vaccinations. I mean, we start giving our babies drugs and shots and, you know, medication even when they're tiny. And when babies have colds, instead of putting them in rooms with steam or, you know, nurturing them and loving them and taking them out in the sunshine where they can grow and get healthy and strong, the first thing we do is we medicate them.
Well, you know, and one of the things is the NIH, National Institute of Health, has said that, and again, and I don't want to make a show all about ADHD because this is not just ADHD kids we're talking about, but that, you know, that there is a misdiagnosis in ADHD that's about 20%, and that the kids most likely are the younger kids to be misdiagnosed because, you know, they're just the youngest ones in their class, and so they're just not socially prepared or able to deal. And they have these playouts, which get identified as ADHD. Now, knowing these facts, knowing the fact that we really don't know what taking a young developing brain and putting in speed on a daily basis is going to do to that brain development, we do not know. Let me tell you what over $200 million in lobbying bought out of Washington last year was a program to go into daycares and preschools to identify these kids and diagnose and get them medicated before they go to kindergarten.
And I'm glad that you said that, you know, that people are coming in to nursery schools to do this, because I think that, you know, even part of the child abuse, as we look at it, is that the parents aren't present. That the parents are busy working, that the parents have nannies, that the parents drop their kids off, you know, in these programs at the gym or whatever, in a room full of kids so they can work out or they can do their life. But the fact that they aren't conscious to what is being given to their children because they're not watching. They don't even know what food is being given to them in nursery school, in kindergarten, at the school. They're not even aware of, you know, that there are people that are watching them and wanting to medicate them and do all of this stuff. And then they're told, this is the system. This is the way it works. This is what you should do. And they're so disconnected from their kids that they're not even aware that this is a red flag and something really harmful to the child.
Well, and, you know, that is one of the other places that I call that we really have to look at. And I have called some less than pretty names, I'll be honest with you, when I get to this part of, you know, because I've talked, referenced this stuff before in different ways. But it's about when you have a decision to have a child. And then you have a child into a life where you and the other parent, whatever the two parents are, make a decision that you're going to let other people raise your child, and then you're horrified when they're not the child you wanted them to be. Now, first of all, we're not supposed to be making our children what we want them to be, going back to that Khalil Gibran. Our job is to be the bow that bends, that is flexible, that is there, discovering who our child is so we can support them to be them. Not who we want them to be, not who we wanted to be that we didn't get to be, so now we're going to make them fill that role. But our job as parents is to be that bow that bends and takes the spring back and lines that arrow up and sends it out into the world. That's what our job is as parents. We can't do that job if other adults, other than immediate family adults, are our primary children's caretakers. One of the reasons that education got into such a problem was because teachers became semi-parents because the kids weren't getting parented at home. If you have to both work, then you need to find out how to work where one of you is working day, one of you is working night, one of you is working from home, or don't have the children. You know, don't tell your child, you're my world, I love you, I would do anything for you, as long as you don't interfere with me being able to, you know, work 50 hours a week and have my Starbucks. And, hey, I bought you designer sneakers. I'm a great parent. Hey, you know, you are going to this class and that class and this after-school program, and you're in the best private schools, and you got the best nanny. And I would do anything. I would do anything for you but stop being selfish. Don't confuse them. At least be honest. I'm really too selfish to be a parent. I had you because I was supposed to. I had you because they told me that's what I was supposed to do. I felt like I wouldn't be a woman if I didn't have a child, or I didn't father a child. The bottom line is you get what's convenient for me to give you. And there's a lot of that kind of parenting go on. There's a lot about that, a lot of the child who is now an adult that never got parented, because we're going into second, third, sometimes fourth generation latchkey kids, broken home kids, single family kids, double income kids. So how do these kids know how to be parents? They didn't have parents. Parents were TV sets. Now they're computers.
That's the thing when a parent is a computer, when you have a question, kids don't go to their parents anymore. Kids, I don't know any child that has a question that goes to the parents. What they do is they go to Google. They automatically go to Google if they want to know something about a lake or a fish or the world. Or they don't ask their parents. They Google it.
Well, and I don't know about you, but I sat there and heard the parents to tell them to go Google it. You know, instead of going and making it a joint exploration of discovering the information.
I mean, in villages, they used to have elders, right, that you would go to your elders, and there was communities, and people would, an entire community would raise a child, and everybody was there supporting that child and nourishing that child, their body, their mind, their spirit, their soul. So what you're saying is so riveting, and it's so frightening that it's happening, and that the statistics that you're sharing with us are enormous.
And we have parents because they didn't have parents. We don't have parents that know how to be parents. We have parents that only had part-time parents. We had parents that were busy, involved with, you know, free love or, you know, finding their way or, you know, doing whatever. We completely dismiss, especially back on my old radio show, it hasn't happened so much on my new radio show, but we used to talk about the Dr. Kevin soapbox, and they make a little sound about going up in the soapbox, because I get so angry when I hear, especially women, put other women down because they chose to stay home and be full-time moms. What's wrong with you? When I hear a full-time mom or a full-time dad, I go, oh, my God, thank you for choosing to be a parent. Now, what, you're going to leave your career behind? Or, you know, you're falling into a 50s mentality, or you're going to... Oh, shut up. You had somebody that had a child and decided that they had a child and that they had a responsibility to that child to not go out and, you know, get their own ego pumped up by a title in the world. Thank you very much. We need to bless these men and women who choose to be stay-at-home moms and dads and work out of the house or make it work. They need to be rewarded. They need to be recognized. They need to be praised. And they need to be celebrated, not treated as if they're lepers or if they somehow are, turncoats against the cause. And, I mean, what? When did our children become so insignificant? When did having and raising children become such a low-level occupation? Whatever it was, we now have children that show that play out. And that's abuse.
It is. I mean, and when you're talking about food and diet and health and consciousness and so much has been taken away. You know, I think about our playgrounds and our parks and our schoolyards are asphalt. And, you know, schoolyards used to have swings and slides and monkey bars and things that you could become strong. And now people are so afraid of being sued, they take away the swings. They take away the freedom to reach and to grow and to thrive. And people used to have gardens in their houses, and they would grow their own food, and you'd have tomatoes and whatever. And now everything is shot up with all these GMOs and the, you know. So what is the advice for a parent today? You know, what would you tell somebody?
Well, there's one more place that I really feel like I need to highlight that's abusive, and then I will give the advice. And that is technology. There has been a research that's done by both the American Pediatric Association and the Canadian and Pediatrics Association, and it was recently came out also in the Huffington Post. But it talked about how much video, TV time children should have, and all the reasons why it actually causes violence, aggression, sleep deprivation, obesity, all of these bad things that get created when we are letting our children be raised by technology or obsessed with technology. And basically, in a nutshell, because I know you want me to give some advice to our parents, but basically between 0 and 2, they shouldn't ever be put in front of a TV, have a handheld device, do any kind of video games. They should be from 3 to 5. Maybe they're saying 1 hour a day. 1 hour a day max. And you want to make sure it's nonviolent TV. 6 to 12, 2 hours a day of TV. Still, no handheld devices, no video games, no violent video games. All of this stuff, and they're starting to prove. Violent video games lead to aggression. They lead to violent actions. These, you know, that we're ending up with these kids that are playing out this, you know, this frustration. Who's teaching them the values, the morals? Who's teaching them how to be socially responsible? Who's teaching them how to have relationships? At between 13 and 18, the guidelines for technology use that this came up with, 13 to 18-year-old, two hours a day maximum of nonviolent TV, 30 minutes a day limit to video games. Any more than then, you start to show the playback, the playout of all of these behaviors we're seeing in our children today that are so disturbing. Letting a TV, an iPad, an iPhone, or a video game raise your child is a form of abuse.
When you see children, their heads are down, they're in their games, they're not in the room, they're not engaged, you know, they're not even present or feeling or seeing, and sometimes you see them in the most beautiful places, and they're not even seeing the beautiful places or seeing the outside because their head is down, and they're not looking up, and they're not looking out, and they're not looking within themselves.
So what do parents need to do? Well, there's a few things parents need to do. The first thing is don't genderize your child right off the bat. When your child is born, you expose them to a little bit of everything. I don't care what their gender is. If they like playing with soldiers, they like playing with soldiers. I don't care whether they're a boy or a girl. If they like pink, let them wear pink. If they like purple or blue, let them wear purple or blue. If they like digging in the dirt, you let them dig in the dirt. Whatever it is, let them experiment and try and be drawn to what they're drawn to. What are their callings in life? We start right at the beginning by starting to limit children by assigning them limitations within their gender, who they can or cannot be. And so that's the first thing. Get rid of gender. Allow your child to find out who all of them are. And let me tell you, if you, you know, and drives me right up the wall. I actually saw a clip that they did where this guy went in and he was an actor and he had a kid that was the actor and the kid wanted a princess outfit. And the kid was like really insisting he wanted a princess outfit. And so the guy was going to buy a princess outfit and he'd keep on asking, you know, do you think I'm doing the wrong thing? And it was so funny. Most of the mothers would be like, well, you know, let him have it. And, you know, he'll outgrow it or he won't, but it's okay. The men that came in were like, you're not being a dad. You're not, you have to, that's wrong. Don't ever do it. And it was really sad. And again, you know, it was a setup to see what kind of reactions they would get. But I will tell you right now, if your son wants to wear a princess outfit, let him buy a princess outfit. Because guess what? If his sexual orientation is gay, he's going to be gay whether you put him in army fatigues or a Snow White dress. If his orientation is that he's really here to be, that he's here and he's straight, then he's going to be straight. And your daughter-in-law, if he's straight and you let him wear a princess outfit, is probably going to give you, will forever worship you because you're going to give her a husband that is in touch with his feminine side. Can you think of any woman out there that's objective?
Remember there was an album called Free to Be You and Me and Marlo Thomas? Yes, and, you know, a lot of the songs in there, you know, talked about that, and I always thought that was so brilliant, you know, and so many people, I mean, my gosh, you know, were involved in that at that time. There's so many celebrities, so many singers, so many personalities that all put their time and talent into that to really be able to teach parents and children how to grow in a whole new way.
Yep, I love the Marlo Thomas work. She's just fabulous. And, you know, so that is the first thing. Let the child see what the child is drawn to, see what the child likes. The second thing is, know what actually a healthy diet is. Do not give your power away. Certainly do not give your power away to the food pyramid. And the FDA has made some huge blunders through the years. You know, for those of you out there who remember that, let's not ever give, you know, skip the butter. Give them that good, healthy, hydrogenated oil, margarine. 20 years later, oh, we made a mistake. Oh, all those health issues from people that were eating that really horrible margarine for you. Yeah, maybe butter's better. They don't know. They're guessing. They're also influenced. It's a government agency. Don't think they're not influenced. And don't think that they haven't had to go back. I mean, it was with blessings that we gave cigarettes to soldiers as a way to, you know, calm them down and for their nerves. They were prescribed during World War II. They were given to them for free. Okay? The list goes on and on and on and on. And it is my belief that down the road, we're going to find the same kind of lawsuits against pharmaceuticals that we found against tobacco companies because they knew that some of the stuff they're giving our kids were absolutely horrible for them, but they hid the facts from it because they were profitable. So you become educated. Throw the food pyramid out. It doesn't really work. Really educate yourself, and then feed your child a healthy diet, and then teach your child what a healthy diet is.
And don't reward them with sugar and you know, terrible food that's going to be harmful to them as good behavior and love, right?
Absolutely. Keep it real. Keep it natural. Keep it whole. Keep it organic. Do your best to feed that child well. If your child is not going to fit on the conveyor belt of public education well, then don't put them in it. Figure out how to homeschool. Figure out how to charter school. Go Waldorf. Go Montessori. Go Friends School. There are alternatives out there. There are choices. Public school, you know, and this was said to me by somebody who had their doctorate in education and was a superintendent of school. The education model was set up on the factory belt system, and as long as more kids stay on than fall off, they're successful, even if that number is 51 to 49%. if you did not give birth to a drone, if you did not give birth to a little square box to fit in a little square peg, to live in little tiny houses all on the hillside in all the same colors, then choose an education that's going to work for your child and be involved in your education and know what does and doesn't work for my child. The first step is always to be your child's advocate. The next step is always to teach your child how to advocate for themselves. Mm-hmm. Somebody said to me recently that, you know, all kids, they made the statement, well, is that why all kids rebel against their parents and have to do just the opposite? And, you know, and that's why, you know, issues skip every other generation. And I'm like, well, no, that doesn't have to be true. There are many children out there that never really rebelled against their parents because they didn't need to. You rebel against a regime. You rebel against a dictatorship. You don't rebel against somebody. I mean, yeah, you have your little rebellious moments and limits and stuff like this. But in my book, Managing the Gift of Your ADHD Child, I've actually been contacted by, you know, people in education and different fields that have said that the program I outline there for dealing with your child would be a great program to be used on any child. And that is the action and consequence method. You never punish your child emotionally. It's always about action and consequences. And with each stage of development, you explain how an action leads to a consequence. You know, hey, you pick up the cup and you spill water, your hand's wet. The action was you spilled the water, it's your hand's wet. Now, the other consequence may be now you have nothing to drink. Oh, you're thirsty. Well, if you hadn't dumped a cup of water on the hand, you wouldn't be thirsty because you would have had water to drink. And that may sound so simple, but that's so powerful. And you have to repeat it a few times. And you have to be consistent. And you have to engage your child. And your child should co-create their own consequences. You need to inform. You need to also understand that you are there as their safety net. They have to know that there are times when you will not let them do something that will truly damage them for the rest of their lives. The other thing that are happening to children today, and it's starting to, the pendulum starting to swing back again, but this idea of every child, you know, does everything perfectly has created so much damage. You've got to teach your child how to fall, how to pick themselves up, how to start all over again. You've got to teach your child, you've got to show them the difference between critiquing and criticizing. You've got to motivate them that they want to be their best selves and not that anything they do is going to get them 5-star goals on the head, no matter what, you know. Here, this child over here spent 20 hours doing their project. Your child spent 20 minutes, and you want your child to be as recognized as the guy that spent 20 hours. Why? Does that happen in the world? Is that how the world works? I don't think so.
This information, Kevin, I'm sorry for interrupting you, but it's so incredibly powerful. And I know it's challenging for people to hear this because it means they actually have to be present and conscious and available and love their child and enough to offer them the kind of future that they deserve to have.
You know, the biggest thing a parent, one of the biggest things a parent needs to do is they need to resolve their issues from their childhood, because childhood issues are some of the most contagious diseases out there. They go from generation to generation. So, and that's something with that person that was referring to about how, you know, certain personalities or certain dysfunctions skip every other generation because the middle generation had the opposite dysfunction. Well, that's not how you want to do it.
Right. You're so brilliant, and you're so gifted, and you're so magical. And just quickly, as we're coming to a close here, how do people find you? Because this information is so vitally important, and it's so informative, and it can change the life of your child, of your family, of your neighborhoods, of your future generations, of society, and of our world today.
Well, thank you. They can come to mydrkevin.com, and from there they can go to the Managing the Gift stuff for ADDHD. There's actually a GPA test they can take, which is your greatness potential actualized, to see are they living in their greatest lives and their greatest selves. Because if you're not, how can you role model it to your child? Mm-hmm. And role modeling we didn't get to, but, you know, it's pretty, you know, if your children aren't going to, they're going to look at what you're doing, not just what you're saying.
Right.
And
this is so important.
That's a good place. Yep.
So mydrkevin.com?
M-Y-D-R-K-E-V-I-N, mydrkevin.com. They can come there. And that's also my Facebook fan page is mydrkevin. So M-Y-D-R-K-E-V-I-N. Like me. You can follow my blog posts, my different things. And every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, if you come to dkrn.net, dkrn.net, that's Dr. Kevin Radio Network, dkrn.net, you can catch my live show, The Dr. Kevin Show.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Kevin, thank you so much for your time today, your wisdom, your knowledge, your brilliance, and for always making a difference in the life of every child and every person that you meet. And we so look forward to having you on again, and congratulations on your new venture and book.
Thank you so much. As always, a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, my gosh, what an incredible interview. Now, if you would like to get that in the palm of your hand as we talk about technology today, just by texting to 55678, just send a text to 55678 and a message, put Nicole. Very easy. So you're texting to 55678. The message is Nicole. And this entire show will be available right in the palm of your hand as a podcast. You can listen to it as often as you like, as much as you like. Take notes, share it with your partners, share it with your family, share it with your teachers, share it with your society. This information is so important. And again, we are here in the studio filming Happily Ever After. We have now become a television show, and I so look forward to sharing these with you. And next week we have a show I've been looking for so long, and that's The Passion Test and Chris Atwood. We are excited and thrilled that he is going to be with us. And for me, being able to follow the passion of your heart, the passion of a relationship, the passion of your future, and always taking a step towards what brings you love, happiness, and joy is truly the way to live your happily ever after. So this is Nicole Brandon from Hourglass Bride wishing you an amazing week, and may all your dreams come true.